Welcome to Stack Trace, a show where we talk about Apple news from a developer's perspective. I'm Guy Rambo.
And I'm John Sandell.
So how are you doing, John?
I am doing really, really good. It's funny because we have this section that we call What Are We Doing, which is the beginning of the show where we tell you a little bit about the kind of projects that we're working on. And we are kind of putting into these show notes kind of some talking points and things that we're planning to say. And I wrote, John's been taking some time off.
Wow, which means you're not going to conferences?
Pretty much. It means that I am not going to conferences and I haven't done any side projects pretty much since we last spoke, but I have still been doing my normal day job and writing weekly blog posts and running two podcasts. That is me taking time off. Yeah, exactly.
Very relaxing.
And you've been on some incredible adventures, I've heard. You took a very interesting route from your conference in Sao Paulo to the airport.
Well, actually, it was from the hotel, but it wasn't my hotel because my hotel didn't have a helipad. How could they? That's ridiculous. I'm going to write a complaint. But So yeah, I went to Sao Paulo last week for the Developers Conference, which is a huge conference with several different tracks. And I, of course, was a part of the iOS track. And I gave a talk on Siri shortcuts. And if you understand Portuguese, you can watch my talk online. We'll link it. And so, yeah, I was in Sao Paulo and I spent the entire week there visiting my friends and some companies I'm very fond of. One thing about Sao Paulo is the traffic is insane. And I was in basically the heart of the city where all of the businesses are located. And my hotel was there and most of my appointments were there. So I decided to do something different. Instead of taking like an Uber or something from the hotel to the airport, I decided to try out this new service which lets you hail a helicopter to the airport.
That is so crazy. And that is like an app, just like Uber or Lyft, like a ride hailing app, but for helicopters.
Yeah, it's kind of like Uber, but for helicopters. So they have a partnership with Cabify and you can log in using your Cabify account. So it's called Voom and it's available in Sao Paulo and Mexico City for now, which is very specific, but it's cool. And it's not expensive. From the heart of the city to the airport, which is very far, it was like $70, something like that.
Oh, wow.
$70.
That's like taking a normal taxi in Stockholm.
Yeah, so people like think you are filthy rich because you can take a helicopter, but it's not that expensive, actually.
Right. Yeah, but it's also like a really cool solution to this problem, that the fact that there's so much traffic. It's like, you know, when people were dreaming in the 80s or 70s about the science fiction, like, how will we solve the traffic problem with flying taxis, right? And then it was, you know, the cars would fly and it would be these science fiction cars. But now we're actually already seeing this, but with helicopters, you know, which I think it's pretty amazing. It's one of those kind of like we're living in the future kind of things that you can open up your phone, press a button, and a helicopter comes pick you up.
Yeah, and they solved this in Sao Paulo a long time ago because I think it's like the city with the most helicopters in the world. I could be wrong, but I think it's something like that, maybe the second one. So there are many, many helicopters. They even have air traffic control specific to helicopters, which is something that's not very common, and they have it there.
Wow.
So yeah, if you're visiting Sao Paulo and you want to have a nice view of the city and go to the airport very quickly, you should try it. It's really cool.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a little bit of an experience also, right? It's not just like a utility. It's a cool thing to do.
It's fun. Like, it's a really, like, comfortable rides. It looks like it's not, but it actually is. It's very nice. I really like it. And I'm probably going to do it again.
Nice. I gotta try it. I've never been in a helicopter. Only on ground and on airplanes, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very different from like an airliner because they fly slowly and they can hover, which is really cool. So I definitely recommend it.
Cool. All right, we should do some follow-up. On the last episode, we talked a little bit about Wi-Fi networks and how Apple makes it hard to get some specific Wi-Fi information using the normal kind of documented standard APIs. But it turns out that you actually can get some of this information.
Yeah, it turns out I was probably confusing Wi-Fi network name with MAC address.
Right.
So they really don't want apps to get access to MAC address. I think they give you like a fake MAC address.
Must be for fingerprinting reasons.
Exactly. Yeah, you can potentially use MAC addresses for fingerprinting and stuff. So yeah, so you actually can get the Wi-Fi network name on iOS and it's not that hard. So I was confusing it with MAC address.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that makes total sense. So it's cool that you can do that. And we've heard from a bunch of people also that the reason you might do something like that, like in a workflow or something like that, is because you might want to differentiate what you do in a script depending on kind of where you are. Like if you're in an office or at home or something like that, which makes total sense that you might use the Wi-Fi name for that. Like if the Wi-Fi name is my home Wi-Fi, then run these actions and things like that.
Yeah, that's actually very clever.
Yeah, really cool. And we have another piece of follow-up, which is a question from Nachdenki, who asks a little bit about if Shortcuts only supports voice triggers, like with Siri, or if you could base it on other triggers, like you could use the location in order to trigger a shortcut. And as far as I know, that's not possible yet when it comes to shortcuts, like the ones you create and the ones that apps can define. But Siri in of itself can do this, like you can place a geofence and things like that. So how does this work, Rambo?
Well, you're right, you can't currently. And this is such a good idea. I think we should all file radars for this because I'm sure they are already planning on that because it's very... It's kind of obvious when you think about it to be able to trigger a shortcut when, let's say, when you arrive home, for instance. I could see that being very useful. So yeah, the only automatic of sorts trigger you can do at the moment for shortcuts is a Siri trigger phrase. And she just woke up on my iPhone here.
of course.
So that's the only thing you can do at the moment. But yeah, it would be really cool if we could use other triggers.
Yeah, because if we think about shortcuts more like a general purpose kind of scripting tool and not just like right now, it's like taking these building blocks and stringing them together and performing a series of actions. But you could imagine the same infrastructure being used in many different ways. For example, on Unix systems, since forever, you've had this capability of running cron jobs, which is essentially you run a script at a given interval or at a given time. And for that, you can use things like, you know, cleaning up a server or your computer or moving things around at a regular time or things like that. And you can also do other things on the Mac, for example, with Automator. You can add actions to folders where you say, whenever I drop a file with this given extension, run this action on this folder and move it somewhere else, for example. It's a great way. I use that, for example, to organize my downloads folder or to take a lot of stuff out of the downloads folder so I don't end up with just lots of stuff in there. And I can just imagine that this could be used as well, this kind of thinking and these kind of different triggers could be used for shortcuts as well, and that it could be really, really powerful in order to create a lot of tasks that maybe are running in the background and just at regular intervals and just helping you automate different aspects.
Well, I'm going to say this. I just opened the Shortcuts app and it has a tab bar, but there are only two tabs, library and gallery.
Uh-huh.
I think we could see an automation tab or maybe a triggers tab show up in the future, maybe.
That would be really cool.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of space in that tab bar.
They've left some room for something else.
Yeah, so let's hope. And maybe they could even integrate it with things like calendar events or reminders, because you can, for reminders, you can already set a geolocation fence or a time trigger. So maybe they could, you could like associate a shortcut with a reminder. That would be cool.
Yeah, that'd be really cool. And that would also be super useful in many ways, actually, where let's say that I have a certain setup that I need in order to do a certain task. Like, for example, if I'm going to write a blog post, I probably want to open IA Writer, I want to open a Swift Playground and things like that. And it would be super cool if I could associate like the calendar event of writing a blog post or a reminder or a to-do task with, you know, putting my device in that specific configuration that I needed for that task.
Yeah, and if I have something like do the laundry and it could turn on the lights in the laundry area and maybe turn on the washing machine, that would be really cool.
Rambo, I don't think you're thinking big enough here. If it says, if you need to do the laundry, then it should just do your laundry, right?
Yeah, it should like a robot take the clothes and yeah.
That's proper automation.
Awesome.
All right, so before we move on to the main topics of this episode, and on this episode, we want to talk a little bit about the new MacBook Pros that came out, as well as some of the kind of controversies and discussions that were happening around them and around the performance of them.
Oh, boy.
And then we want to kind of, oh, boy, yeah, you know, put your seatbelts on. This is going to be a rough ride. And then we also want to kind of talk a little bit more about the future of the Mac as well. But before we do, we want to give you some small updates about the show. So first of all, we're going to do a very shameless thing and steal one of the favorite things from one of our favorite podcasts called Upgrade. So Rambo, tell us, what are we stealing?
We are stealing the Ask whatever the podcast name is format, which they do on Upgrade. I know they do it on ATP as well. So let's do it on Stacktrace. So if there's something you've been wanting to ask us, you can now ask us. How does that work, John? How do people ask us questions?
It's really, really simple. So if you want to ask us a question for an upcoming episode of the show, or you want to provide some feedback or something like that, you can just tweet anything that you want to say or ask us with the hashtag AskStackTrace. So you don't have to tweet at some specific account. You don't have to tweet at us or something like that. You just tweet it out into the Twitter universe and we will pick it up. So just use the hashtag AskStackTrace. And you can ask us questions for upcoming episodes of the show, because one thing we really love about doing the show is getting a lot of feedback and hearing from a lot of people. And now with this, we think that we can do it in a little bit more kind of organized way so that, you know, we don't miss any questions and so that we can, you know, make sure that we answer the things that you want to hear about. All right, so now we want to move on to our first main topic, and that is all about the new MacBook Pros that Apple just released. So this took us a little bit by surprise. We got new MacBook Pros. Many people were expecting them to hit this fall since they didn't come during WWDC, but there was a surprise drop here in the middle of the summer. So Rambo, tell us a little bit about the new MacBook Pros.
Yeah, so Apple, out of the blue, came out with new MacBook Pros, and I think it's great for, I think it's the first time I'm glad we only do this every other week, because we would have spent so much time discussing speculation about the new machines, and now that it's been like 2 weeks since the release, we know all of the information, so we can just talk about facts and not so much speculation, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, even though speculation is a lot of fun too.
Yeah, it is, but I don't you think it's funny that it used to be that there would be lots of speculation about Apple products before they shipped, and now it seems like the speculation ramps up after the products are shipped, like, oh, they're not telling us the full story.
Yeah, a little bit.
The earth is flat and stuff like that.
A lot of conspiracy theories, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, so they released new MacBook Pros. They have updated processors. And I think the first thing that was interesting about the new keyboards is that iFixit found out that they have a little membrane between the keyboard mechanism and the keyboard keys.
Yeah, exactly. And this is something that Apple says officially is for reducing the noise that the keyboard makes. But a lot of people have already speculated that it's to fix many of the kind of stability problems or reliability issues that these keyboards have been kind of plagued by. And the fact that with the current keyboard, if you get like one little piece of dust under the key, it can stop working. And now with this kind of membrane, this like plasma shield, then you can keep some of the dust out. Maybe this is another one of those kind of crazy theories. But I mean, it doesn't sound too crazy, especially since there has been so many reports of this keyboard kind of failing that Apple will do something like this to actually fix it.
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure this is the case. The membrane is designed to at least alleviate the problem and try and prevent dust from getting into the mechanism itself. They have a patent from some time ago that describes pretty much this mechanism. And the patent says it's for preventing dust from damaging the keyboard mechanism. So
there you go.
And also, we need to think from their perspective in terms of legal issues.
Yeah.
They have class action lawsuits going on about this, so they wouldn't be able to just go out and tell that, oh, we fixed the problem with the keyboard, because that's admitting that there is a problem.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that makes total sense. And I mean, it can be a little bit of both, right? And a lot of people have also been kind of criticizing the feel of the keyboard and other aspects of it as well. So, you know, it seems to be kind of a little bit of a hack or a little bit of a patch on top of this kind of controversial keyboard. Like we mentioned on a couple of episodes ago, we both kind of like it. But if these kind of fixes can improve the stability, I mean, that's of course really, really awesome.
Yeah, I'm really hoping that this actually improves the situation. I've seen some tests that people have done with like dropping a bag of Cheetos on top of the keyboard.
Because that's what you want to do with a super new expensive computer.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, just drop a bag of Cheetos on top of it. So yeah, apparently it is in fact better, and we hope that it is. And I'm not going to upgrade right now because I don't need to, and they are extremely expensive. But I'm happy that they are doing something about the keyboard. So another thing that they have done with this new generation of MacBook Pro is that they have included the T2 chip.
Yeah, exactly. And this is a upgraded version of the T1, which was previously in the MacBook Pros. And essentially, this is like a shrunken down watch, like a shrunken down Apple Watch. Would that be a good way to describe it, Rambo?
Well, actually, the new T2 chip is more like a mini iPhone.
Yeah, but the T1 was like a shrunken down watch,
yeah.
Right?
The T1 was like an Apple Watch. It even reported itself as watchOS.
Right, exactly.
The new T2 chip is more like a mini iPhone.
So next version of the MacBook Pro, we're going to have a mini iPad in there. Or mini Apple TV.
That would be cool. In fact, from some of my spelunking with early versions of Bridge OS, which is the OS that runs on those devices, apparently they use iPads to like deploy test builds of Bridge OS.
Interesting.
Yeah, they use iPads because there are some images in there that suggest that you kind of plug in an iPad and you basically have an external touch bar, which is kind of weird, but That's how they test it.
And they would probably do that on an iPad instead of an iPhone because the iPad screen is larger, so it can actually fit the full width of the touch bar, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in fact, there's an app out there that allows you to mirror your touch bar to an iPad, and you can not only mirror, but even if you don't have a touch bar, you can run like a server on your Mac and basically project a touch bar onto an iPad.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds really, really interesting. So there have been some updates to Bridge OS in general. Like, you know, you mentioned it already that they're using iPads and there's a lot of iPad stuff in there, but there's also some kind of baseband things in there as well.
Yeah, so very interesting. I, of course, did some spelunking immediately after they released the new devices.
Of course.
I happen to have the feed for Bridge OS firmwares handy, just in case I need it. So I had a look. And yeah, there was a new firmware for Bridge OS in there. It looks like they are using a universal build now, which is like a single Bridge OS version for all of the Bridge OS devices. So both the T1 and the T2 based ones. This new version of Bridge OS includes kernel extensions for baseband, which is very interesting.
Interesting. And baseband, for those of you who don't know, is basically the fundamental things you need for a cellular radio.
Yeah, so let me try and explain it in a way that doesn't get confusing. So the way I think about it is the baseband is a device within the device that will manage everything that has to do with an antenna. So it can manage the Wi-Fi even, not only the 3G and LTE, but there are several different extensions and not all of them are for like Wi-Fi. They are required to communicate with this separate device, that's the baseband, which will manage the antennas. And even something like the SIM card, which is present in there. So I tweeted about this, and I always like to add the caveat in there. So this could be something that's left over from iOS. The extensions themselves look incomplete, so it could be just a leftover. They like configured the target wrong and built something that shouldn't be in there. But it could be a sign that they are working on Macs with LTE or something like that.
Yeah, and this is something that a lot of people have speculated about in the past as well. And it's not far-fetched to think that in some future version of the Mac, you would have a 4G or maybe 5G at that point capable laptop. Because just like the iPad and how it can have cellular connectivity, it could be really, really useful to have a kind of standalone Mac that can have its own internet and its own connectivity. And like you say, you know, when we find some of these, or when you find some of these symbols and extensions and things like that in these operating systems, sometimes it's because they just get shared between different platforms. And maybe also there's some dependency things there where, you know, some part of the code base kind of depends on some of these components and it was easier for them to just include them rather than stripping them out. And even though that might seem weird, I mean, we have seen weirder dependencies on Apple's platforms before. For example, in order to update Xcode, you have to close iTunes, right?
Yeah,
so you have to close your music player to update your developer tool.
That's a classic one. And the new one that's funny is that there are macOS specific strings on watchOS because of Marzipan.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so I mean, they probably share a lot of the, you know, the code base in many different ways that we don't really know about and that maybe doesn't make sense when you look at it from kind of an outsider perspective. But once you know that, oh, okay, we needed that function from here, or we needed that kind of subsystem from this kernel extensions over here, etc., etc.
Yeah, but this baseband stuff in BridgeOS is particularly interesting, considering it's not just a leftover, which it could be. It's interesting because at the moment, at least that I know of, the Bridge OS device is not in charge of the wireless communications on the device. So the Intel chip is handling that. Of course, there are separate chips that handle the wireless stuff, but they communicate directly with the main processor. So it's interesting. They could be moving the wireless processing to the auxiliary device maybe to make it more secure or something.
Yeah, or maybe it has something to do with power efficiency or just like sharing the same kind of networking stack between all of their devices, right? Because all the other ones, they run ARM. So I think moving some of these kind of fundamental things from the Intel chip onto this, you know, T2 or T3, like these companion chips, I think could make sense from that perspective too.
Yeah, and speaking of LTE Max, I think the in terms of software, the system is ready for it because the networking stack is shared between macOS and iOS. So the system knows about having different types of network connections, which have different limitations. So when you are connected to LTE on your iPhone, it does things differently than if you're connected to Wi-Fi because of the inherent differences between the networks. So the Mac already has that knowledge in the system. The thing that was missing, I think, was the baseband part, which would need some adaptations to run on Intel. But since they now have these mini iPhone inside your Mac, you can have basebands and you can use the same code base from iOS with some changes. Because the entire audio stack is already running through the T2 chip.
Yeah, that is amazing.
and we forgot to mention Siri. Oh,
you're gonna have to bleep that out.
Yeah. Oh, I'm glad HomePod didn't wake up.
But overall, really interesting, I think. And this kind of hybrid approach that Apple is taking to building these computers. I mean, we saw it first with the iMac Pro with the T2, with, you know, the secure booting mechanism that it has and that it can do encryption on the fly. But now we're seeing those things as well make its way to the MacBook Pro, which, you know, isn't that strange because there are so many of these features that are really useful in a MacBook Pro as well. But the fact that you have like a laptop with two chips and, you know, when it was just running the touch bar and touch ID, that was kind of one thing. But now you have this way more kind of sophisticated integration between those two. And I just find that very fascinating and very impressive, to be honest, like that you can have a laptop so thin and light that can just have this, you know, amount of complexity inside of it.
I'm fascinated by the whole Bridge OS thing, as you notice by all of my spelunking.
Cool. So there are a lot of things to be impressed by in these MacBook Pros, but there was a little bit of a controversy when they first came out. Now, this story has taken a little bit of a turn just as we started recording. So there's breaking news here on Stacktrace. Well, breaking news for us about kind of how the story has been going. So, Rambo, do you want to give like a quick summary about kind of what happened, why there was a little bit of a debate in the community around the performance and the potential throttling of these new machines?
Well, it's not a new Apple product without some sort of controversy. Immediately after they release any new product, people all around the world go crazy trying to find any flaw. So it's not that impressive that people found something wrong with the new MacBook Pros immediately after release. I'm not going to go into that much detail because the whole situation is basically fixed now. But what was found during benchmarks and other types of tests was that in some circumstances, the i9 version of the MacBook Pro, the 15-inch, in some circumstances, it would perform worse than the i7 version. And it was determined that the cause for that performance issue was thermal throttling. So the system was making the processor run slower because it was getting hot. So the system was basically throttling the processor because of heat. And it resulted in some circumstances, the i9 having a performance that was behind the i7. Because the i7 wasn't getting throttled that much.
Yeah. And throttling in of its own is not kind of new or controversial because all of these kind of modern processors, they have this like dynamic clock speed where they can adjust their clock speed, they can adjust the speed that they run at depending on a lot of different factors like load and temperature and things like that. So it's common to see these kind of variations, but of course, if you spend all this money to get like the beefiest 6-core i9 processor, and then you start working with it and you're seeing worse results than with an i7, of course, you're going to get a little bit disappointed. And there was all this kind of debate in the community about like, you know, did Apple paint themselves into yet another thermal corner, just like they did with the Mac Pro? Or are they getting too aggressive? Is this because Intel is falling behind on shrinking their process? You know, what's the reason behind this? And there's a lot of different opinions. But just before we started recording here, René Ritchie of iMore just published an article that Apple is actually planning to fix this with a firmware update.
Yeah, and I didn't comment on this story until today, at least not on my Twitter, which is the place where I would comment about it, because I wanted to wait. I was really under the impression that Apple wouldn't have done something so stupid, like,
yeah,
because they know that people will find it out and complain a lot, so I knew they wouldn't have done it on purpose and so stupidly. So I was just waiting to see what was going to happen. I was in a Brazilian podcast last week. I recorded with them in São Paulo. And in that podcast, I mentioned that I thought it could be something software related, because people don't realize these days that the software modulates the hardware in ways that you don't imagine. Like the software is really in control these days, and so the software is controlling even stuff like the processor speed. So they have firmware in there, and they coordinate different subsystems together to determine what should be prioritized in terms of how much energy this specific chip should get at this specific moment in time, because, oh, we are rendering video, so we are using the GPU, so the GPU gets priority and the CPU is getting throttled, and we don't want the fans to run too fast, too quickly, because it's going to be noisy and annoy the user. So there are many, many factors in play, and most of them are software related when it comes to throttling. And people were ignoring that fact mainly last week during the controversy. I think I saw like 2 or 3 people commenting that, hey, maybe this is some tuning that's missing from the system for this specific machine. And so, yeah, so today, as we record, just before we started recording, Apple released a software update, a supplemental software update that's specific to the new 2018 MacBook Pros, and it specifically addresses something about missing a key in a firmware thing that controls the performance management of the CPU, and that was it.
I'm happy to see that even Apple has problems with code signing.
Yeah, they mentioned key, but I'm not sure if it's like a signing key or if it's like a key in like a dictionary. It could be.
Right. Yeah, probably something like that. Like some kind of option.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But maybe like it's a bundle that they forgot to sign, that they signed incorrectly or something. So the system wasn't loading it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could be something like that. Yeah, like you say, it's like in like we hinted at before with the fact that these machines now are getting so complex and they have so many moving parts. And, you know, especially with modern tasks, whether you're talking about video or 3D or even things like machine learning, a lot of things are GPU bound. And you have this kind of always back and forth, and you have this kind of orchestration inside of the computer, like what parts get prioritized and, you know, where do we boost things, where do we cut things back, and especially in such a kind of thin and light enclosure, you really need that kind of thermal management, and a lot of it comes down to software and controlling these things, signal processing, and always kind of balancing out the fan speed and the fan noise to kind of what kind of performance you can get, because all of these things generate a lot of heat and there's not a lot of places where this heat can go, and there's not a huge fan, you know, always spinning super high power. So there needs to be a lot of kind of intelligence and a lot of different systems in place here.
Yeah, and that's one reason why I really don't care about benchmarks. I really don't pay any attention to them. I'm not that kind of nerd. I know some people really love benchmarks, but like these days, the computers are so complex and there are so many systems in place that work in different ways and depending on the environment. So I really don't think that benchmarks are actually useful as a real measurement of how you feel performance in your day-to-day work.
Yeah, exactly. And we also have to remember that while it's great that we're kind of, as a community, holding Apple kind of accountable and we're holding them to high standards, because these machines are really expensive, right? They're like the top of the line, especially if you go for the i9, the 6-core, you're going to pay a lot of money for that. So of course, we need to have the right expectations, and we need to make sure that we check that Apple is actually delivering what they're delivering. But I think also to some extent, whenever something like this happens and when it kind of blows up, and you have all these different YouTube channels and they're all kind of pushing the similar narrative, and it's all very controversy based, or it's all very much about, you know, this is a shock, you know, we can't believe Apple is doing this, and
outrage.
It's an outrage. And sometimes, you know, it's easy now when we have this report and we have this new software update, it's easy for us to kind of have this hindsight. But I think also to some extent, whenever something like this happens, I always like to also, just like you, take a step back and maybe not comment on it like right away, but instead take a look at, okay, what are some of these facts? What is actually happening? What can we actually see? And is it something that is realistic that this could actually happen?
Yeah, we know there are professional Apple haters and there are professional Apple defenders as well.
Yeah.
I try to be neither of those. And I try to not be a professional hater of anything, because I don't think that's a good place to be. And I don't think it's even healthy for you to be basically hating something or someone or some company all the time. But yeah, there are some people out there which really, really try really hard to bash Apple at any moment, and I really don't understand what's the point.
Yeah, but for many outlets, I think it's a little bit also for kind of business reasons. You know, it's more interesting to write about or to have a YouTube video that is about the controversy than just saying, these machines are great, go buy them, you know? So it's, I think a little bit, you know, it's a little bit of both. And sometimes also as people, we are entertained by these kind of controversies and these kind of things happening. And, you know, it's kind of all piles up together.
I was basically that meme of Michael Jackson eating popcorn during the whole thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Just like watching and chilling while people kill themselves.
Yeah.
Because of this. And it all reminded me of the AntennaGate story. Do you remember that?
Yeah, absolutely. And people were even calling this ThrottleGate, right? So everything is a gate.
Yeah.
And whenever one of these things happen, I'm always reminded of this amazing song by Jonathan Mann. It goes, if you don't want an iPhone 4, don't buy it. If you bought one and you don't like, bring it back. If you don't.
Yeah, so this was so funny. They basically held a press conference for addressing the issue with the issue was that if you held the iPhone 4 in a specific way, you would like bridge two antennas on the body of the device, and it will cause your signal bars to basically go all the way down to like 1 or 0. And so this became a huge thing, and AntennaGate, and how could they do this, and all of the outrage, we know.
Basically exactly the same as just happened last week, but for a different thing.
Even like people who never bought an iPhone and wouldn't buy an iPhone either way were complaining about it. So he came out with this song, which was the main line was, if you don't want an iPhone 4, don't buy it.
And if you bought one and you don't like it, bring it back.
Yeah. And even I listened to an episode of Welcome to Macintosh with him, and he was telling the story that basically someone from Apple told him that this song, basically Steve was feeling really down because of the whole situation, and this song cheered him up to the point that he played the song as the intro for the press conference. And you can see in the video that Steve was actually dancing to the song.
Yeah, he like entered the stage dancing. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so it's a very, very funny story.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll put a link in the show notes to Jonathan Mann's song. It's super great. And you can kind of sing it. You can sing along with it. But whenever he says iPhone 4, you just say MacBook Pro instead. And it's the same thing. Yeah. So it's it really stands the test of time. So really funny story there.
So this whole thing about the processor having to be throttled because the thermal capacity of the unit can't contain the full power of the processor, it brought this conversation about Apple moving to their own chips on Macs. What do you think about that, John?
Yeah, so we've discussed it a little bit on previous episodes as well. Like, could there ever be ARM Macs or Macs running on Apple's own chipsets that they design and build in-house? And like you say, this these kind of situations that come up, and it's the same whenever some of the Macs gets delayed because of Intel being delayed. These things keep coming up, and I'm sure they come up a lot inside of Apple as well, where it's like, you know, we have these really powerful chips that are powering all of our other devices except for the Mac, and where we are in complete control. You know, we can ship a new iPhone with like double the speed every single year, but for the Mac, we're kind of, you know, stuck with this slow iterations and delays and, you know, the roadmap not kind of holding up. So I think that I'm sure that Apple already has ARM running on a Mac, like we already, or a Mac running on ARM, like we already discussed on previous episodes. But I think probably like these things just kind of pile onto that fire to like, you know, probably this will happen maybe sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and how soon do you think that could happen? Because I'm actually kind of, I think we can call that optimistic. I think we can see something about that next year even.
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of signals, right? We have iOS apps now on the Mac with Marzipan. We have this T2 chip, which, you know, like we said, is basically a miniature iPhone inside of the Mac. You have all these kind of things from iOS, not only in terms of design and user experience, but technologies like frameworks, platforms, you have the chips all kind of coming over and kind of invading the Mac space, right? And I think it's just a matter of time. And like you say, I wouldn't either be surprised if there was at least a version of the Mac running ARM like next year or the year after or something like that. Because, you know, the fundamental building blocks are there. But of course, the big issue is like the whole app ecosystem and all of the things kind of around it and all the tools and things that people rely on having to kind of also move to ARM. But I think Apple has already shown that they are willing to take these like aggressive steps. For example, imagine a new kind of 12-inch MacBook running ARM. I don't think that's very hard to imagine.
Yeah, I don't think that's hard to imagine either. And when you look at everything that's running on your Mac, I think we can safely say that most things can be migrated to ARM without that much trouble. Of course, it would be a big migration and a big thing to have going, and would take several years for the transition to complete, just like the PowerPC to Intel thing was. I think it would be less traumatic, but it would be a big thing. And there's also the issue of virtualization, which like many people run Windows on their Macs, and since they both run on Intel processors, that's fine. You can just virtualize using the processor capabilities. But if you move the Mac to ARM and you want to run that one Windows app on Parallels or something, then you're in big trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. So you have these kind of challenges just like that. And you also have the other kind of end of the spectrum where you have these like really high-end machines like the Mac Pro, which is coming out, the iMac Pro. Like, could Apple make chips like that? I'm sure that given enough time, especially if we look at kind of the graphs of the performance of the A series of chips that Apple makes and the Intel chips, at some point, it seems like Apple is going to catch up if they haven't already done that, especially for a product category like the 12-inch MacBook. But these more powerful chips remain another question. But I think a lot of it actually comes down to developer tools. And sure, not everything can be abstracted. I mean, at some point, some tools, like if you're talking about like drivers and really low-level stuff, that might need specific kind of versions depending on the processor architecture. But for apps and for like more high-level things that are just running on top of the operating system, I'm not sure if, you know, if it needs to be that big of a deal if the developer tools kind of get updated to have more this more kind of abstracted kind of interface that we work against.
Yeah, the way we write apps these days, we very, very rarely have to worry about the architecture that we're running on. That's really not a big thing these days. We usually don't go to the level of programming where we need to care about like endianness and the specific instructions the CPU is going to execute for us. It's usually more the SDK that's the issue, and we're seeing that being fixed by Marzipan, or at least improved by Marzipan, which are iOS apps running on the Mac. And a new thing in Mojave is that macOS can now run bundles that use the iOS bundle format. So apps in iOS have a different bundle format. Apps on both macOS and iOS are just folders with a .app extension, but the stuff inside there is organized in a different way on each system. And with Mojave and Marzipan, the Mac can now run bundles from iOS. So the architecture is not really that big of an issue when you think about an App Store app, for instance, any App Store app. I don't know, Snapchat, take any App Store app, even like my Browser Freedom Mac, which is a Mac app. I could probably build it for ARM with no issues because it's just Swift code.
Yeah, exactly. And as long as the compiler supports ARM, which it already does, but it would probably need to be adapted for this kind of flavor of ARM and for all the kind of underlying things that go with it, you know, you don't have to make any changes on the app level. And it's really funny, actually, when we look at these things, I think, where we look at things like, you know, the T2 chip. We look at this that you just mentioned, like the fact that you can now run these app bundles. We look at all these different technologies that are kind of coming over from iOS. And it's almost like Apple, they have this big checklist, like this big to-do list, you know, on the wall in Cupertino, which is like things that we need to do to get on ARM and Macs, right? And then they just like check one of the boxes here and there, like, okay, this year we're doing this and this, that. And then at some point it's going to be like, oh, we have an ARM Mac.
Which they probably have prototypes at least.
Yeah, I would be surprised if they didn't.
There's one thing about Macs and other devices, such as iPads, which is a long discussion in our community. Why do you think people complain about something like the MacBook Adorable only having one part? And they're totally fine with an iPad having only one part, which is not even an USB-C part, it's a Lightning part. What's a computer, John?
Exactly, what's a computer? This question, I think, it is really interesting because it all comes down to expectations And it all comes down to what you're thinking you might be using this device for. And increasingly, people are using iPads for computery tasks. So, you know, it does beg the question, what is a computer? And, you know, the versatility of these machines and how much comes down to the ports. Because, you know, as a lot of people have discussed previously as well, it's like, you know, the fact that we're all moving to USB-C, you know, really minimizing the amount of ports and things like that. And this could also like tie into the whole ARM transition, where if the Mac platform and the iPad platform start to become just form factors, but on top of the same platform and with the same kind of capabilities, it really, really starts making you wonder like, okay, what's the difference and which one should I use for which?
Yeah, I used to be completely against touchscreen laptops, and I started to think about the subject, and I realized that I didn't have any reason to be against them. I was like the old guy yelling at the cloud, oh, you kids want your touchscreen computers. That's not how you use a computer. But who am I to say how people are supposed to use a computer? So I would be fine if Apple would like release a MacBook form factor running iOS with a touchscreen. I even think it would be kind of cool. Maybe not the computer for me, but I know many people would really like it. And yeah, so I think this discussion is going to come up more and more as we go on. And I find it interesting that they are so vehemently against the idea of having like a merging of the platforms, but we know that Apple never talks about future plans, and the official answer today to are you merging iOS and macOS is a huge no, but it could change tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. And again, some of this stuff comes down to business reasons, right? Where if they can sell you two devices, then that's better if they can just sell you one device. And I think also now maybe I'm going to sound a little bit like a conspiracy theory person, but, you know, with the power that we're getting with these devices, especially with like the iPhone X, it's not that difficult to imagine a future where you just have your iPhone and you can just kind of use that to power different screens, right? Where you could have the iPhone kind of connect to a laptop shell and it becomes a Mac, or it can become a desktop. But there's very little incentive for companies to move in this direction, because that would just mean selling you just one device. And I'm sure there are so many, many other reasons as well, but I think it's also interesting from that perspective, where right now it seems like Apple, they are very, very firmly with, you know, the Mac is the Mac and the iPad is the iPad. And apart from the business reasons, I think it also is a lot about just, you know, calming people down a little bit, especially people who love the Mac, to say like the Mac is not going away. But for example, you know, if we had ARM Macs, and if the Mac could run ARM and it could run iOS apps, you know, there's nothing really preventing the iPad from running macOS, right? So would that happen? You know, and once you start blurring these lines, it's I think you get so many interesting questions, and really like what's a computer is really at core there, where, you know, will we get to this future where you have like one device that powers everything, or will we keep having these separate devices with separate form factors for different tasks?
I think the iPad running macOS thing, it makes me think about the UI. I think that's the main barrier for the Mac to be used as a touchscreen device, because you could be using it like, I see sometimes people using some of those Windows laptops, and they are just like dragging the mouse cursor on the screen using their finger. Right. And like, that's just ridiculous.
It's like an ATM, right? Where sometimes you see the mouse cursor when you tap the screen. Yeah, it is really ridiculous.
If you like using it like that, okay, I'm fine with it. I could buy the same machine and just never use the touchscreen, or use it very rarely. But I really think that it requires the UI to be designed for touch or designed for mouse and keyboard. I think a touch interface can be used with a mouse and keyboard. It's just inefficient, but a mouse and keyboard interface used with touch is really weird and it doesn't scale.
Yeah, but that's kind of my point where, you know, if you would have a Max running ARM, you could have something like when you use the computer for touch, you have like an iPad style UI. But the same thing also goes the other way if the platforms are so similar, where what if you have your iPad and you connect like a Bluetooth mouse and a Bluetooth keyboard, it can become a Mac, right?
Yeah.
So I think that is the really interesting kind of question.
The problem I have with your first example is like, but you as an app developer, would you design one interface for the mouse and keyboard and another interface for touch? And then I think the answer is no. And if that's the case, wouldn't you be doing like the lowest common denominator and we would have crappy interfaces for mouse and keyboard?
Yeah, probably. I mean, we're going to see what's going to happen with Marzipan, right? Because that's kind of what Marzipan is all about, where, you know, there are so many companies that don't want to build a Mac app or can't, or, you know, they have some reason not to build a Mac app, where with Marzipan, you know, they might just bring over their iOS app and it might not be the Mac experience that we all know and love, and it might not be the most optimized UI for a mouse and keyboard, but it's a app, right? It's something working.
Yeah, and I'm fine with that because I think it's a compromise between not having the app at all on the Mac or having an app that's maybe not perfect, but it's there. But if the whole system was a compromise, then I'd be kind of sad.
Yeah, it would be really sad. And it kind of comes back to my original question there where, you know, if we could have one device, would we? Like, would that be good? Would that be something that, you know, these companies would want to build? Would that be something we would want to use? And I think the more we blur these lines between these form factors, the more challenges we have like that, where it's like, you know, right now we have macOS. It's like really, really nice for a laptop. It's really nice for a mouse and keyboard. We have iOS, which is really nice for touch. But what happens when you start moving things over?
Yeah, and Apple is known for being the last one to do something, but doing it in a nice way and better than the ones before. So I can only hope that if they end up doing this, they have some magical solution that we can't think of right now.
Yeah.
And that would be really cool. And I just thought of another pretty big business reason for not announcing anything in the direction of merging the platforms, which is what if they did the Marzipan thing and didn't mention very clearly that they're not merging the platforms? What would that mean for purchases of devices? What would that mean for their stock? Like, yeah. I think it's important business-wise for them to be very clear that they're not doing it, even if they are doing it behind the scenes and they're waiting to announce it only when it's fully baked.
Yeah.
I think I'm not sure. That's one of those cases where we don't know if they are really saying what they think or if they're saying what they need to say to not like bankrupt the company or something.
Yeah, just like in the internals of a laptop, there's so many things at play here, right? And there's so many different reasons why something might happen. But ultimately, like, if we would get a transition like this, I think it comes down a lot to developer tools. And I think it comes down a lot to, you know, finding this right abstraction on top of all these different things where, you know, we have Marzipan now, which is essentially just like you can run your iOS code on the Mac, but it's an obvious kind of stepping stone where I think probably what we're going to end up with in the future is something more where you say that you want to create a button and you maybe give it some specifications and then the system kind of decides how this big this button should be or, you know, what kind of dimensions it should have based on many different factors Which is something we're already seeing with things like images, where you pick the best image depending on the resolution, but kind of extending that idea to kind of controls and UI as well.
Yeah, basically adapting your interface for the different trait environments, as they call them.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Really interesting discussion there, I think. And I'm sure that we're going to revisit the topic of our Macs and, you know, what the future of the Mac is. It's, of course, constantly evolving. And I think so many of these things kind of keep bringing up these very difficult questions. If you have something you want to contribute to this discussion, then feel free to tweet at us on Twitter. We are at StackTracePod. And you can now also send us any questions that you'd like us to answer on a future episode. Just tweet with the hashtag AskStackTrace. And we'll pick that up and answer your question on a future episode. But we've now reached the end, so we just want to remind you that you can find the show notes for this episode at stacktracepodcast.fm. And if you like the show and would like to see us do it more, if you'd like to support us doing it, if you'd like to provide us with some additional encouragement, or maybe even join our live show that we're doing every month called The After Show, then I really hope that you want to become a patron. And the way you can do that is you can go to our Patreon page, which is at patreon.com/stacktracepod, where you can contribute anything from $1 and above. Any contribution is really, really appreciated, and it goes directly to making the show better. But for now, this is it, and you can find Mr. Rambo on Twitter at _inside, and you can find me at John Sundell. And thank you so much for listening, and say goodbye, Mr. Rambo.
Goodbye.